This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io. Masters of Dispute Resolution is designed to provide those involved in the mediation process with the views and insights of the most experienced and accomplished mediators in the profession. We'll share the stories of conflict and lessons learned from mediating challenging and intriguing disputes. You'll hear stories about how conflict affected the lives of those involved in the conflict and how resolution of disputes through mediation provided them with the ability to move forward unburdened by an ongoing dispute. Through our discussions, you will gain insight in how to address and overcome difficult issues and achieve more satisfying results in mediation, whether you're a mediator, attorney, or have been or contemplate being involved in mediation. Your host is Len Levy, mediator and arbiter with ADR Services, Inc., a leading alternative dispute resolution provider. Len litigated complex cases for more than 30 years and has been a mediator since 1998, joining ADR Services on its panel of neutrals in 2008. He has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution beginning in 2014. And now your host, Len Levy.
Thank you, Daryl. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Season 5 of Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast that will add tools to your mediation toolbox. We're brought to you by ADR Services, Inc. and the American Institute of Mediation. In each podcast episode, you will hear a story about a conflict, the impact that conflict had on the lives of the parties involved, how resolution was reached, and lessons to be taken from the conflict and its resolution. Now, many of the details of the story you're about to hear have been modified to preserve the confidentiality essential to mediation while also conveying the essence of the conflict and its resolution. Joining me today is, and this is, I've got to tell you, this is a real treat. Joining me today is Raphael Lappin. And Raphael's background is rather extensive and different from an awful lot of mediators. He brings an extensive and unique background, not just because he's mediated in excess of 1,000 litigated cases. I think he's mediated across a variety of sectors, including commercial, transactional, family, employment, partnership dissolutions, construction. We could go on and on and on. And Raphael has also taught conflict resolution at Southwestern Law School and Whittier Law School, and has obtained advanced mediation and negotiation certification from the Harvard Law School Program on Negotiation, and actually trained under Professor Roger Fisher. If anybody is familiar with Getting to Yes, Roger Fisher is one of the co-authors. And speaking of authors, Raphael has also authored a book entitled Working with Difficult People. Raphael's background is also unique in that Raphael brings to his mediation a background that includes a bachelor's in and a master's in Talmudic law. And that provides a rather unique skill set that he's developed over the years. And we could do a whole podcast on that alone. But let's get into the story that we're going to hear from Raphael, which is about bullying. It's a case about bullying and how the matter affected the parties and how that matter also was resolved with Raphael's help. Thank you for joining us, Raphael.
Thank you so much, Len. It's not just a pleasure, a real honor to be here with you and to actually interact with you. So it's a huge treat for me too. So thank you for that. So this case was kind of interesting and unusual, the first time I've ever had to deal with this kind of a case. On the prosaic level, it was a personal injury case. On the less prosaic level, it was a personal injury that resulted from bullying. So we had three parties to this particular dispute. We had two co-plaintiffs. It was a mother and a daughter. The daughter was, she was the victim of the bullying. It was on a sports field at school. The school was one of the well-known and highly regarded school districts in California. And she was bullied on a sports field at school by two other girls. The daughter and the mother were bringing the case. The case happened a couple of years ago. At that time, the daughter was still a minor. She's now no longer a minor. And the mother was also suing because she had to take off work to take care of a child during that period that she was recovering. So questions of lost wages and that sort of thing from the mother point of view. On the defendant's side, we had the school district, which was being defended by their counsel. And then we had the two families of the two perpetrators, the one girl's family and the other girl's family. And they each were being represented separately by different counsel. And by the time it came to me, it was already quite advanced in the litigation stages. And we essentially it was a multi-party dispute because we had the school district and the two families all being represented by different counsel. And then, of course, we had the mother and the daughter. The mother and the daughter, by the time it came to me, did not have full representation. They had an attorney that was helping them on a limited scope basis, but were not involved in full, did not have full representation at that time. And that's essentially the case that came to me. There were injuries, there were damages, there were economic damages, there were general damages. So we had quite a few things that we had to deal with on both sides.
Well, let me just interject a question. What form did that bullying take?
It's a physical attack. So it was a physical assault and battery, essentially, with injuries. The school had personnel on site, and the claim was that they were negligent in enforcing anti-bullying statutes that the state imposes on the school districts over here. So there was a sort of negligent factor over there. And then in the bullying side of things, the school was concerned about their reputation, about sanctions that potentially could be imposed if they're not fulfilling the bullying, anti-bullying obligations, and financial costs that they could have been exposed to. So the school district had a lot to lose out of this case.
Were the girls that had, and I assume girls that were bullying her, were they on her team or on opposing team? And was this in the course of whatever sport it was?
It was during the course of a sport, and I'm not sure as to whether or not they were on the same team or a different team. Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that. That didn't really come up. But it was an act of bullying of these two girls against the one girl on the field.
How did the bullying affect the life of the girl that was bullied?
So it affected her. First of all, she has quite significant physical damages that she had to recover from, and she also had some emotional damages and stress that she also had to see therapy for quite a long time, and it set her academic trajectory back significantly. The good news is today I just got the news this last week she was accepted to Berkeley, which is great. But it did set her back quite a bit, and she had doctor's appointments, she had therapy appointments, and she had to go through a period of recovery both on the mental level and on the physical level to overcome this traumatic event of hers.
Had there been any particular incident that precipitated this or a set of circumstances that led to the bullying that you could discern going into this?
Not that came up. And we also established there wasn't any discrimination aspect of it or harassment aspect of it. It seemed to be the usual type of things that go on amongst teenage girls. You know, the usual kind of bullying. Sometimes it's, as we know, sometimes it's on the internet, which has oftentimes led to terrible, disastrous outcomes. And sometimes it's physical and person to person.
Did someone take a video of this, or did this somehow expand out?
No, not other than the fact that there were witnesses to the event that played a role in the litigation, obviously. But as far as going further out on the internet, no, as far as I know, it didn't go beyond that.
Okay. That is a significant problem these days, and I could go on about my feelings on bullying on the internet, but the scope did not include that. It was probably a good thing in this instance.
Yeah, and that becomes also kind of difficult in how to evaluate damages when it's gone out onto the internet. It's a whole different, legally, I think it's probably a whole different kettle of fish over there. But this was all physical, so it was kind of an old-fashioned.
It was the one event that took place, as I'm understanding it, and resulted in physical injury and mental
P
injury.
pain and suffering and emotional issues, yes. All, that was all evidenced by therapist reports and doctor's reports and so on.
What did those reports say in terms of just how this was affecting her emotionally? I mean, at the time, as I'm understanding this, we're talking about someone in the area of 14, 15, 16,
Yeah, about
that area.
16.
How was this affecting her emotionally?
As far as I can tell, from and we were involved in the dispute resolution aspect of it, so we weren't necessarily involved in the litigation side of it. But as far as I can tell, it was like any personal injury, where you had damages, out-of-pocket expenses. You had on the mother's side, you have loss of wages, and then you had the pain and suffering aspect of it that you had to go through as part of the treatment to rehabilitate her. So those were the, sort of the essential parts of the liability side of it.
Okay, so the matter comes to you. What information were you given initially, and how did you follow up on that information in order to convene this?
Okay, so this is where it might get a little interesting, actually, in terms of how it actually came to me. So Len, you wrote an article back in February of 2004. And I don't even know if you remember that article, but I thought it was an excellent article. And the article was A Mediator Versus a Burnt Out Litigator. Does that ring a bell?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And you made the point over there, an important point in terms of that it's a calling. Mediation is a calling. It's not just an excuse for moving on from a burnt out litigator. And one of the points you made over there was when you get a case, you've got to, in a simple case, in a non-complex case, the two attorneys have to agree to use you. And sometimes it's four people because the parties as well. In a multi-party dispute, you've got a lot of other people that have to agree to you. And with each layer, it becomes less likely that they will pick you. So I had to kind of overcome that in general, not specifically in this case, but in general, I had to kind of overcome that obstruction, if you will. And one of the services that we offer beyond just straight mediation is negotiation. So a party will call me and say, this is a case we're involved in. We would like to open up channels of communication for settlement. And that's where it takes a lot of skill because I've got to very quickly build rapport and trust with the other parties. I've got some funny stories about that as well. So this is how this case came to me. The plaintiffs called and said, we're involved in this case. This is where it's at. And it's been in litigation now for 2 years. We would like to see if we can possibly settle it. So at that point, I would then wear two hats, helping my clients with negotiation. But as you know very well, anytime you're involved in a negotiation, you are a mediator as well. The only difference is, are you a party to that negotiation or are you not a party to that negotiation? But anytime we're negotiating, even for ourselves, if we are good at negotiating, we are also at the same time, unbeknown to the other party, mediating as well.
And the skill of convening is starting to be a lost art in this profession. We are going to take a break now, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about how the parties came to agree to mediation and what attitudes they brought to the mediation. I'm Len Levy. We're on Masters of Dispute Resolution, and we're chatting with Raphael Lappin.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California. Leveraging technology to drive resolution, ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitration, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and Raphael Lappin is just about to tell us how this matter got convened and how he applied what has become a lost art among mediators, the convening process.
Yes, thank you, Len. So first of all, we were dealing with the two families of the two perpetrators of the bullying. We were dealing with quite aggressive attorneys. They realized that my clients did not have full representation, and they were taking full advantage of that in terms of pressuring them to depositions, pressuring them to discoveries, very, very aggressively. So we had these three components: the school districts with their attorneys, and then the two families with their separate attorneys. The first thing I had to decide is, do we want to deal with this globally, or do we want to deal with it as three separate negotiations? That was the first decision that I made, and I decided we need to deal with it as three different negotiations. Each one had a separate set of interests, a separate set of concerns, and once I decided we had to deal with three different entities, then I had to decide sequencing. So who do I deal with first? Mm-hmm. The school stands most to lose on this case. The first party perpetrator, we had very good evidence as far as they were concerned. The third one, the case was weaker. So we started with the school district. We started working on settlement with the school district. And again, they were pushing deposition. So the very first entry that I came in and basically said was, we can do this, and my client can do this on this date. That's fine. And by pushing it off a little bit, give us time to possibly explore settlement. So I did it very...
Raphael, I want to interrupt you for a second, because you're using a term, my client.
Yes.
And so what I'm hearing is something that is slightly different. You're not initially approaching this as a neutral in bringing this together. Am I misreading this?
No, you're not misreading it in the sense that the plaintiffs were the ones who contacted me and said, we want to get out of this litigation. We would like to speak about settlement. Mm-hmm. Once I'm involved there, then I'm also mediating, but I'm coming in quietly without the other side even realizing that I'm actually mediating.
Okay.
So basically, I'm coming in, not where both parties have brought me in as a mediator. I've come in as a negotiator, but mm-hmm. as an envoy, kind of. And at that time, bringing the other side in terms of a collaborative effort to resolve the problem, and I'm using regular mediation skills at that point.
Okay, so basically, what you're conveying to the other parties other than the plaintiffs is, we need to enter into a collaborative process.
Correct.
And so entering into this collaborative process, everybody has roles. And what did you want the other the parties other than the injured party to understand about the role that you were playing in this now convened process of collaboration?
So first of all, facilitating collaborative communication. Shifting the conversation from highly aggressive litigation language to more problem-solving language, and seeing me as somebody who is a fair broker to be able to facilitate settlement and settlement discussions. So basically, everything is the same as a mediator would be, where both parties have hired them, mm-hmm. as far as the process is concerned. The only difference is the method of entry.
Okay. Well, let me ask you one other question, and that is, what is the method of compensation here? Are you seeking payment for your services? If so, what's the understanding going into this?
That's a very good question. So my client is paying me.
That would be the injured party here, yes.
The injured party in this particular case was my client in paying me, mm-hmm. and they were paying me to get this settled and resolved in a way that all parties could walk away from it and feel they could sleep at night. It's a different model which kind of addressed the point that you made, that sometimes in mediation you have such difficulty getting all parties to agree, but doing it this way, I've got a point of entry which doesn't initially require all parties to agree. But as I said, the skill comes in where you've got to very rapidly and very quickly gain the trust of the other side, because you're coming in, your point of entry is you're an agent for my opponent. Why should I listen to you?
Exactly.
You've got to get over that very, very rapidly and very quickly, that they are able to gain trust.
Perfect. The advocacy that you are engaging in is the advocacy for a collaborative deal.
A settlement. A settlement that addresses the interests of all parties to the greatest extent possible.
Right.
Because if their interests aren't addressed, they're not going to agree. If a plaintiff side doesn't interest on it, they're not going to agree. So as a negotiator, I'm always a mediator if I'm a good negotiator.
Got it.
And I use exactly the same skills. Delve deep into the concerns, the interests, the needs, so that they start feeling that I'm somebody they could talk to and do business with.
So that was my next question. In order to satisfy the needs of the other parties, you have to have them trust you and be able to convey to you what their needs are.
Correct.
And what their interests are, not just what their positions are.
Correct, correct. Okay. And that's where, as you know, as a mediator, Len, that's where things start opening up.
Right.
And getting them off those positions, I mean, to understand the interest. And we'll speak a little bit about the fact that sometimes the interests that we think people have are not the real interests that they necessarily do have.
Right.
So part of the work is uncovering those deep, deep underlying interests.
So what interests did you discover that you might not have previously known in engaging in this process?
Right. So on the interests of the plaintiff, I found something interesting. They had three basic interests over here. First of all, they were tired of this litigation.
Okay.
It was diverting a lot of the energy from other places that would be more productive for them to invest that energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always the communications with the attorneys, the depositions, the motions that needs to be filed, you know, just one thing after the other. So they were getting tired. So one interest of theirs was to exit, but exit with dignity. Okay, that was one of the interests.
Mm-hmm.
Another one of the interests were to avoid reprisal attacks. If I withdraw my case from any of these parties, they could suddenly decide to do a reprisal attack and sue me for abuse of process or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So just pulling out with prejudice would not make sense for them. The third thing, which I think was very important for them, was that there was some meaning to the fight. There was some purpose to the fight.
Got it.
Okay, so those were the three things that I had to meet with my client. The school district's interests were not hard to understand. They wanted to avoid publicity on the case. They wanted to avoid further investigation by state authorities. Okay. They wanted to also get out of the litigation. You know, nobody wants to be in their litigation. So that's typically a common interest if they can get out of it in a way that meets their interests. Mm-hmm. So those were essentially the school interests. And the interests of the two families also was to be able to get out of this with minimal exposure, financial exposure, liability, and that sort of thing. They also, in litigation, at the very core, nobody really wants to continue litigation if they can get out of it with dignity and if they can get out of it with having the needs met, at least to an acceptable degree.
So you've now defined what their interests are. And you've done this very succinctly, and that took I just from experience, I believe this process has to have taken some period of time to be accomplished.
Yeah, this was over a period of weeks. But one of the reasons that I tell people always to prepare well for a negotiation or for a mediation is because once you've prepared your interests, and more importantly, spend time trying to anticipate the other side's interests, then even if they're not forthcoming in terms of the interests, you can say to them, as I've tried to put myself into your shoes, I would imagine that your interest is A, B, C, and D. How accurate is that? Now, even people who don't like necessarily to share information still like to criticize. So the very first thing I said, well, you didn't mention E, F, G, and you start getting engaged in a process of this, talking about interests.
Let me ask, physically, where are the parties?
Most of this was done via email and phone.
Was there ever a time where the parties were together?
No, not in this process. But one of the things about mediation, the way it's practiced today, Len, I'd love to hear your view on this as well. But to try to say, okay, we'll convene for half a day or for a day or maybe even 2 days. The very first thing I tell parties is, look, we'll try our best to settle. But mediation or negotiation sometimes has a bit of a life of its own. Ideas need time to percolate. People need time to consider the alternatives. We can't always just force a solution in a half a day or a day. But I'll tell you what I am committed, and that is whether or not we settle today, I will continue working on this post-mediation as well. And that's when the emails go and the telephones go, and we continue. We don't just stop at the end of mediation if the
And
case hasn't settled.
that's a very valuable piece of information that the party should take to heart. The idea of we have 4 hours or we have 8 hours or whatever it is, parties have to recognize that everything has to fall into place for everyone else and for everyone to agree to a set of settlement.
And sometimes a time
Time.
limitation is good. And sometimes we use that to our advantage. But that's usually later on in the process.
Well, look, we're going to take another break, and when we get back, we are going to be talking about and continuing our discussion with Raphael Lapham on the takeaways that we might have, lessons to be learned, this mediation and its resolution. I'm Len Levy. We're on podclips.io.
Hi there. We hope you're enjoying another fascinating episode of Masters of Dispute Resolution. Has the show ever made you think about becoming a mediator and doing the work you're hearing these experts doing? Are you thinking about it right now? Imagine a career where you're working to help people in conflict find win-win solutions. The sense of purpose you'll feel can easily be heard in the voices of the guests on this show and its host, expert mediator Len Levy. Or maybe you're a mediator already looking to build your skill set in order to pull off some of the brilliant and out-of-the-box solutions that these guests are talking about. That's where we come in. We're the American Institute of Mediation, and we train mediators of all levels. We're the place you come to learn the basics of mediation or to raise your game in the field. We specialize in mediating commercial and litigated cases, but we teach the skills in such a way that will work in any setting. Our slogan is world-class training for the complete mediator because we feature the world's best mediation trainers and we prepare you for all aspects of being a professional mediator. Find us online at AmericanInstituteOfMediation.com and browse all of our courses that are available for streaming on demand. You can watch our courses at your convenience, at your desk, on a plane, or in bed in your jammies. We'll see you in the mediation world soon.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. And in our third segment of this episode, Raphael Lapin and I are going to discuss some takeaways from this entire process that Raphael went through with the parties. But first, let me ask you, was this resolved?
It was resolved, and I think it was resolved quite well.
Okay, so How did that resolution meet the interests of the parties?
Okay, I'm excited to share that with you. So the first thing, as I mentioned, I handled it as three separate negotiations and mediations. We first worked with the school district, and we finally reached a settlement. It was a financial settlement with the school district. You know, they were a very low number originally. My clients were a rather higher number. But eventually, because of the fact that the school had so much to lose, we had an idea of how far we could actually get them. And they settled quite well. Now, in these kind of cases, in personal injury types of cases, as you know, the economic damages are usually jointly liable. The general damages are severally liable. But from the school, we really got the financial side settled on both accounts. Plaintiffs were no longer very concerned about financial reimbursement because the medical costs were paid for, but they were reimbursed for the pain and suffering and for the medical costs to how they felt, to the point they felt comfortable. So we had the settlement with the school, but we still had the two other defendants. And, you know, when you settle with one party and you don't settle with the others, and you've got to go through the whole rigmarole of filing a motion for good faith settlement, that they could object and claim it wasn't good faith. And we didn't really want to get into any of that sort of stuff either. But they heard very quickly that we had settled with the school. We didn't even have to tell them. Okay. They knew we had settled with the school. And that I think also worked well in our favor. So now we had to work with the other two clients. The first of the other two clients, the one who we had a stronger case against, they had made a settlement offer a while back. And my client said to me, you know, we are willing to accept that offer now. And that's the first takeaway here, Len. And the takeaway is oftentimes we want to settle based on have we won or not. And I always tell people, I said, the difference between litigation and negotiation or mediation, and I use negotiation and mediation interchangeably because it's the same process, essentially. And the difference is that in litigation, I want him to get what he deserves. In mediation or negotiation, I need to get what satisfies my interests. So oftentimes in litigation, we're not going to accept any offer until we feel we've won and they've lost. In the plaintiff settling over here with the second one, they said, look, we're comfortable with that amount.
Because their needs were satisfied through the other settlement. Some of the needs they sought to obtain from the other parties were already satisfied.
That's right. That's right. That's number one. Number two, we also understood the interest to exit with dignity, not to have reprisal attacks of abuse of process, and to be able to have some meaning and purpose to this fight. So we had to work now on exiting with dignity. We had the financial loss and we were taken care of. We had to work on exiting with dignity, then giving some meaning over here. So we had settled with the second party on that amount, and that was all fine and good. Everyone was happy there. Now the question was the third. The case against them was the weaker. And plaintiff was thinking of, again, just walking away from the case and dismissing it with prejudice, but was concerned about the reprisal, abuse of process and all that sort of thing, and they wanted to give some meaning to this. So I said to them, I said, you know, I've got an idea here. How about that third client, we don't claim any damages from them, but we reach an agreement that they will give a significant donation to an anti-bullying organization that your fight over here at least stands some chance of contributing to future prevention.
Excellent.
How does that sound to you? Now, that wouldn't happen in an evaluative case, as we were talking about before. Now I had to sell it to them. But again, before I did that, before I went anywhere to settle, I confirmed via email with the plaintiff, if we could reach settlement on these things, does that meet your interests of A, B, and C? And I didn't move until I had firm confirmation via email, yes, this is what we want. So then I had to write a very carefully crafted email to the attorney on the other side, basically appealing to his sense of humanity. I said, you know, we could all elevate this dispute to the point of where we are making a contribution and this dispute wasn't meaningless in terms of trying to prevent future bullying to the extent that we're able to. And we would like to propose that instead of a financial settlement to the plaintiff, that your client agrees to contribute X, and I told them the amount we wanted, X amount of dollars to an anti-bullying organization. The victim of the bullying would choose. Very quickly, we got an answer. We said, yes, we agree to that. And my client found an international anti-bullying organization that provides all sorts of learning seminars and webinars to schools across the world to educate them about bullying. I made contact with the guy, with the CEO of this company is based in England. We had a very interesting discussion, and he was actually a victim himself as a child. And that's how we basically settled this whole thing. All interests were met. The school was able to get away with minimum exposure. My client was able to exit this with dignity. There was purpose to the dispute. There was also, but there was no chance of reprisal attacks because there was a settlement. There wasn't a withdrawal. So we had all aspects were actually settled, and my clients were able to move on. And as I mentioned, the victim of this got accepted to Berkeley just a week or two ago.
Well, you've illustrated through this a key difference between settling litigation and resolving a dispute. The resolution of a dispute is, in my view, something that should always be the goal, but it's not always possible. It takes a great deal of insight by someone who is trying to facilitate this in the role, for example, either in the role of traditional kind of mediator or in the role that you had assumed as representing a client.
Representing in dispute resolution.
That's right. The idea of going for a satisfying result, meeting the needs of everyone, leaves people with a sense of accomplishment that settling litigation doesn't necessarily do. What's your client's feedback to you in terms of the net result?
You know, I just got an email, I think at the beginning of this week or end of last week, from the mother, just thanking me enormously for what I've been able to do for them. They can continue with their lives. This was consuming every aspect of their life, both the mother and the daughter. They got out of this in a way that they can hold their heads high. So they definitely with dignity. And you know, that's the other thing, and sort of talking to the point you just made. And that is that, you know, in litigation, we forget that we're dealing with human beings on the other side. And we tend to demonize each other and dehumanize each other. But people at the core, most people at the core, are still very human. Nobody wants to fight this out in court. But again, there's a dignity that has to be preserved.
Right.
You can't settle a case that violates somebody's dignity because that's a personal interest that everybody has.
Right.
Okay, so if you try to settle a case that violates their dignity, they're not going to agree because you haven't met one of their core personal interests. And that gets to the point in mediation or negotiation, never to neglect the personal interests underlying the parties that are not difficult to anticipate, because that's quite common amongst everybody. And one of the ways we get people to speak about that is a method we call self-exposure, essentially. So I might say, Len, you know, as we're going through this, if I was in your seat, I would be very concerned how my boss would look at any settlement.
Right.
I would imagine this is a concern of yours. Would you care to sort of speak about what would need to be met to satisfy that need? But as soon as I've done self-exposure that I would be concerned about how my boss would react, you feel safe to speak about it too. But you're not going to bring that up until I bring it up.
It's the Cialdini reciprocity concept.
Correct.
What you have just expressed is something that is so important to us as human beings. As you say, nobody wants to fight. Well, I can't say nobody, given... I'm not going to make a political statement at this point, but there are some people who do for whatever reason. Let's not go there. The idea is that in the overwhelmingly vast majority of disputes, people want the conflict to be over. Unless there's some sort of secondary benefit they're achieving, want it to be over. Because as you say, it's draining. It's emotionally draining. To me, one of the great takeaways from this example is that the attorneys seem to have recognized their clients' needs being fulfilled as the end goal, not putting another notch in their litigation belt. That's my takeaway. And I've got to tell you, I so appreciate your educating me on another approach to the mediation process, the dispute resolution process. There are ways to approach this, as you have now guided us. There are ways to approach this that don't necessarily fit into every model and don't necessarily fit into every attorney's expectation. But if you listen to your client and you listen to not just what they want, what they need, we go a long way to actually obtaining satisfactory results and satisfying results. So thank you.
Yes, you've summarized it, I think, exceptionally well.
Thank you. We're unfortunately out of time because I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. Before we wrap up, Rafael, if people want to contact you, what is the best way for them to do that, whether they need whatever services, mediation in the traditional sense or mediation as you approached it?
Thank you, Len. Yes. So my website is probably the best way to get any further information about contact or anything else. And that's my last name, Lapin, Lapin, negotiationservices.com. So that's all one word, Lapin. There are two ends in the middle of the word, the end of Lapin and the beginning of negotiation. So it's Lapin Negotiation Services with an S at the very end, .com.
Thank you again. I really appreciate your being here. And the conversation was just absolutely enjoyable. Hopefully, we can do it again sometime.
Thank you, Len. Yes.
I thank you. Thank you, Daryl Wayne, my engineer and producer. I'm your host, Len Levy. And this is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io, powered by Infigen Labs, Inc. I hope you will continue to enjoy the stories we bring you. And in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.